Welcome to New American Radio, a series exploring new territories for the art of radio.
In its 10 years as a weekly national series from 1987 to 1998, New American Radio commissioned and distributed over 300 original works. Conceptual new drama, associational documentary, language explorations, sonic meditations, environmental compositions, musical explorations, and works that pioneer new dimensions in acoustic space. Wave Farm is thrilled to partner with New American Radio to ensure these works remain available to listeners today and into the future. New American Radio was organized by Helen Thorington, executive producer, and Regina Beyer, associate producer. A special thanks to both Helen Thorington and Joanne Green for their generous support and collaboration in this partnership. Up next is Lovely Ways to Burn by Gregory Whitehead. Thank you for listening.
Everybody's got a fever. That is something you all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Everybody's got the fever. That is something you all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Fever isn't such a new thing.
I remember having this recurring nightmare.
Well, after the first jolt,
house was on fire when I was a kid. You know, it was always
about 2,000 volts.
The ultimate disaster, and I would arrive.
Starts
and the whole front of my house was pulled
his
off.
Eyelids,
like a doll.
Brushes his pants with his fingertips. You know,
on the edge, screaming.
He kind of twitches his nose and arches his eyebrows up. He's grinding his teeth like he's got a mouthful.
Just the shock and horror of arriving and
yeah, the whole time he's making
seeing this familiar place,
faces at us,
gutted,
all twisted up,
and
anyway, we had to turn up
everything
the juice.
That's private hanging out.
So he's just kind of frying there
and
on the chair, humming and panting.
And my family is
gurgling
the
stuff coming out of his mouth. He's like some kind of crazy baby. He's clicking and yelling, and at one point he started barking like a dog. And then kind of screaming.
Well, that was just one real intense dream I remember having, and always being terrified by.
I don't want to hear anything like that.
Coming down my street. And looking up in this nice suburban cul-de-sac and seeing this nice split-level house split open.
And his head, by this time, his head looks like it's on fire, right?
This gaping front and a woman standing on the edge,
he starts
in her nightgown.
All the usual stuff of female body parts.
It wasn't my mother. Maybe it was me. I don't know. But I was there watching. It was just unrecognizable.
Romeo loved Juliet, she felt the same.
Everybody got fever.
When he put his arms around her, he said, Julie, baby, you're my flame.
Everybody got fever.
Fever, I'm on fire. Fever, yeah, I burn for soon.
Everybody got fever.
Well, first, I think what's interesting is that I have two matching burns on my left hand, on my right hand, on my index fingers. They're in exactly the same spot. They're exactly the same size. I didn't go about doing this on purpose. It just happened that way, about 2 weeks apart. And I have burns on my wrists. I have a scar where someone's sparkler burned a hole in my wrist. I don't think I put my hand in the fire. That's what happens. But I don't despair over it. I look and I think, well, there's burns. It's interesting. It shows my experience. It's the same thing as the old furniture that's been broken and repainted 100 times. I don't want to strip it down to the wood. I want to see all the layers of paint. I want to see the burns and the scars. The scars are interesting. They tell a story.
Yes, well, of course, there's also this deep, seductive quality of fire. Fire as an object of desire. Fire as an object of fascination. That is also very deep in human cultural history, as fire as something that draws, that illuminates, that that gives power, that that cooks. That coming into contradiction, that kind of that desiring aspect of fire in contradiction with its destructive aspect. And perhaps death by fire is a kind of transmission, the somewhat sanitized fire of the electric chair, representing an act of transmission, namely, look, if you live by fire in a kind of brutal pursuit of your passions, of your individual passions, stripped away from any acknowledgement of competing desires or the desires of the state or the desires of authority, that you will go up in smoke, that this is how you lived and this is how you died.
And no one would ever tell me, and I'd have to make it up all by myself.
So,
you're talking about more childhood memories. I remember one really important step as a child becoming competent was to learn how to light a match. And that was a sign of power, and that was competence, that you could do it, because it was frightening. And you had to learn how to do it by yourself. And then, that's all you ever wanted to do, was light matches.
Kiss me, you give me fever when you hold me tight. You give me fever in the morning, you give me fever all through the night. You give me fever when you kiss me, you give me fever when you hold me tight. You give me fever in the morning, you give me fever all through the night.
Ah.
You give me fever when you kiss me, you give me fever when you hold me tight.
You take me fever in the morning. You give me fever all the night. You give me fever when you kiss me. You give me fever when you hold me tight.
You getting any of that fire?
Well, of course, the theory, in general terms, the theory behind the use of electroshock as a therapeutic measure is to literally burn out, to set fire to these electrical impulses in the brain, to short-circuit certain patterns of impulse within the brain that are leading to compulsive, destructive, neurotic behaviors on the part of the patient. So it is, in a sense, a use of electricity to create a disturbance, a firestorm in the brain, which can release the patient from these. That are generated by the brain itself. Now, whether or not this has any substantive merit, I think is open to a considerable amount of scientific debate. We know so little about the neurophysiology of memory, but I believe that you can think from a philosophical level of the if one were to perform a psychoanalysis of fire, of the phenomenon of fire, that it would have quite a bit to do with this with this peculiar set of internal flows that we call memory, and that this knowledge is what leads us to associate fire with both desire, the deepest kind of desires and ecstasies of the human spirit and of the human body, and at the same time, fire becoming a kind of terminus, a kind of end, a form of antibody, this ethereal, the transformation of the body into
fever. I'm on fire, fever, yeah, I burn for soup.
Everybody got
fever.
Give a kid a scissor. What a lovely way to burn.
When I was little, I always used to draw houses without any fronts on them. Make little doll houses. And you'd have, what's it called, like a cross section. And each room, different things would be going on. And you could make all kinds of wild rooms. Wild little sections and wild parties going on up in the attic that no one would know about. And seeing the secrets that were going on. No,
so,
it would be a house, like a cross-section of a house.
Not always sexual secrets. There were family secrets. There were things that I knew that were going on.
Like the way a dollhouse looks like.
Sometimes they literally were going on.
And I would draw in all
on the roof.
That were going on in
and there were, my parents would leave.
Oh, I think, well, I was probably too young to think of specific things going on because I didn't really know. But people were having fun. People were doing things they weren't supposed to be doing. Up in the attic.
Fireworks. That's another story. Mm-hmm. What better thing when you learn how to light a match to light something that's going to explode? My hand could be a book of matches that would light all these unseen fires.
To make people explode?
Yeah. It's just life. There it is on my hand. It's not anything to be ashamed of.
Or letting them
yeah.
explode you.
It's a different story. I don't know. I mean, I know they're connected. I can't.
I felt like it was.
Going in through the ears is easier.
Suddenly I found that match to light, to this new...
It's direct experience.
I had no name for it.
House. I don't know.
Set this house on fire? In flames? There were... It was a place that I knew nothing about.
Shooting out straight into your brain. Doesn't have any
emotional... And no one would ever tell me.
And
I'd have to make it up all by myself.
You can't help but hear.
So,
it's
fireworks. That's another story. Mm-hmm. What better thing when you learn how to light a match?
You see someone. You see someone who you would call a burnout, and you can see it in their eyes. There's just lead left there. There's nothing left
to make people explode. Yeah.
You're talking about more childhood memories. I remember.
What about making yourself explode?
One really important
letting them make
letting step as a child becoming
explode you.
Competent was to learn how to light a match, and that was a sign of power, and that was competence that you could do it because it was frightening, and you had to learn how to do it by yourself. And then, that's all you ever wanted to do, was light matches. And I think that's the way it should be. And then, somehow I got lost.
You give me fever when you hold me tight.
What a lovely way to burn.
You give me fever in the morning.
What a lovely way to burn.
You give me fever all through the night.
What a lovely way to burn. What a lovely way to burn.
Ah. Then I couldn't find the fire extinguisher.
In the beginning, he wasn't saying nothing, you know, he's just kind of twitching. Sort of like a nervous tic. After the first jolt, about 2,000 volts, starts blinking and squeezing his eyelids, like brushes pants with his fingertips, you know. And he kind of twitches his nose and arches his eyebrows up. And he's grinding his teeth like he's got a mouth full of pork gristles, you know. And the whole time he's making these kind of screwed up faces at us. It's kind of all twisted up. Anyway, we had to turn up the juice. So he's just kind of frying there on the chair, humming and panting. And he's gurgling the stuff coming out of his mouth. He's like some kind of crazy baby. He's clicking and yelling, and at one point he started barking like a dog. was just, and then kind of screaming. I don't know, I never heard nothing like it, and I don't want to hear anything like it again. So anyway, we had to turn up the juice a third time, and his head, by this time, his head looks like it's on fire, right? Because anyway, then he starts cussing, and all the usual stuff of female body parts. I mean, I don't think I gotta mention them. It's the female body parts. And anyway, he wasn't gonna have his hands on that shit.
Just the shock and horror of arriving and seeing this familiar place gutted and everything that's private hanging out in the open and burning, and my family in the midst of that, or what was left of them in the midst of that.
Fire as a symbolic means of purifying the political body, the national body, of these agents, these
going
contaminating
through the ears is
agents.
Easier. It bypasses all the equipment.
In the beginning, he wasn't saying nothing, you know, he's just kind of
we
twitching.
Have numerous eyewitness accounts of
sort of like a
individuals
stick.
Being burned at the stake, particularly in southern Europe, during the Inquisition.
It's shooting out straight into
after the
brain.
First jolt, you know, about 2,000 volts, starts blinking, squeezing his eyelids, like brushes pants with his fingertips, you know.
And they describe in painful detail the sounds and the sight, of course, and even the smell, which apparently was quite overwhelming for many.
He kind of twitches his nose and arches his eyebrows up. He's grinding his teeth like he's got a mouth full of pork gristles.
Mm-hmm. What better thing when you learn how to light a match to light something that's going to explode?
Yeah, the whole time he's making these kind of screwed up faces at us. It's kind of all twisted up.
Cannot allow this kind of open display of officially sanctioned violence.
Going in through the ears
and
is
consequently
easier. It bypasses all
we
the equipment.
Developed more sanitized means, such as the electric chair, but think
anyway,
it's direct experience.
We had to turn up the juice. So he's just kind of frying there on the chair, humming and panting. And he's gurgling the stuff coming out of his mouth. He's like some kind of crazy baby.
It's shooting out straight into your brain.
He's clicking and yelling, and at one point he started barking like a dog.
Yeah, well, on the one hand, it is, of course, a displacement of the physical site of the execution from a public space to a controlled interior space.
I felt like it was
a space within the controlled space of the prison.
So, anyway, we had to turn up the juice a third time. And
suddenly
head,
I found that match.
By this time, his head looks like
it's
on fire, right?
Because
he was gone.
Exposure of the surface
he was,
of the flesh.
He was gone. The smoke was coming right out of his ears.
There were
to the interior.
It was a place that I knew
so
nothing about.
The electrocution actually burns. It's a form of burning. It's an extension of this burning, but the body is burning from the inside out.
And you see someone who you would call a burnout, and you can see it in their eyes.
As a demonstration of all of this, and as a way of maybe testing it and getting you involved, I have put on the table three photographs. One of them is a blow-up of the eyes of a woman at a moment of extreme religious ecstasy, a moment of communion with her God. After which she collapsed on the floor in a trance and began to speak in tongues. The second photograph, okay, is going from the sacred to the profane is the eyes, again, just the blow-up of the eyes of an individual at a moment of erotic ecstasy. And finally, I have blown up just the eyes again, I've isolated the eyes of the face of an individual who has just been subjected to a rather severe voltage of electroshock therapy. So, but I'm not going to tell you which is which one is which. I have them, of course, labeled on the back. And now you tell me if you can tell the difference. To me, they are the identical eyes, the sacred ecstasy, the profane ecstasy, and the electricity convulsion, that same mixture in each pair of eyes of extreme animation, the eyes almost dancing out of the head, and on the other hand, a curious vacancy and of emptiness, the sense of death.
Just heard Lovely Ways to Burn by Gregory Whitehead, broadcast by New American Radio.